Monster Man, Special Episode, Nereids. Hey everybody, it's your old pal James from the future here, and I've got two quick notes before this episode gets started. The first is a little bit of a content warning for this one. I'm talking about Nereids, and both the Nereid rules in the Monster Manual 2 and the Greek mythology that surrounds Nereids involve not really caring a whole lot about Nereids' consent to relationships. Now, as always, I try to keep this show family-friendly, so nothing too explicit, but if it's the kind of thing you'd rather not hear about, it's kind of unavoidable in this episode. So if you want to skip this one, I won't blame you. Secondly, and much less seriously, sometimes in this episode I say Nereid, and sometimes I say Nereid. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I'm just no good. Okay, with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode requested by one of my patrons. That's right, this is someone who has gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged at the $5 or higher level. And if, like today's patron, Andy Action, you decide to pledge at that level, you will get the opportunity to choose a monster for your own extra-long special episode. So thank you very much, Andy, for your support. Andy has chosen to talk about Nereids. And he writes, I'm running Hot Springs Island now, which features Nereids as a major component of an elemental-based ecology. I'm interested in hearing your take on water spirits, sea nymphs as a whole and individually. Well, all right, Andy, we'll see what we can do. So there are a lot of different water spirits or water-dwelling humanoids in the monster books that we've been covering. I mean, just to go from the books that have appeared on Monster Man, so that's the Monster Manual 2, the Fiend Folio, and Deities and Demigods, we've had the Merman, the Nixie, the Nymph, the Triton, the Fossagrim, the Vodianoi, but not really. The Vodianoi in folklore are quite like this, but not the Vodianoi in Dungeons & Dragons. The Nereid, of course, the Selkie, the Serene, and arguably the Swanmay. And while all of these spirits or water beings are different, they do have some things in common, at least in their folkloric incarnations. And I want to suggest that there is a broad category of water spirits that, you know, we can particularize, but is always worthwhile stealing elements from one and applying it to another. To start with, then, let's take a look at the Nereids in Greek mythology. Now, Nereids in Greek mythology are 50 daughters of Doris and Nereus, and they often appear as kind of attendants of these other ocean gods, as attendants of Poseidon, for example. And they're actually pretty important. They turn up a lot in ancient Greek art and in ancient Greek poetry, and like all 50 of them are named. So they appear in Homer, and they appear in Hesiod. So probably the Hesiod one is, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm just going to pick out some of the descriptions, because it's basically just a long list of Nereids and their names. Hesiod writes, to Nereus and to Doris, that were born in the barren sea, daughters greatly beautiful, even among goddesses, Pluto and Eucrante and Amphitrite and Sau, blah 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 blah, and Thoe and lovely Halia, Pasithea and Erato, Eunike of the Rose Arms, and blah 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 blah, and Galatea the Beautiful, Hippotoe the Lovely, and Hipponoe of the Rose Arms, Kimodoke, who with Kimatolege and Amphitrite light of foot on the misty face of the open water, easily stills the waves and hushes the winds in their blowing, Kaimo and Ione, Halimini, Glaconi, these were the daughters born to irreproachable Nereus, 50 in all, and the actions they know are beyond reproach also. So they sound pretty good. Lots of descriptions of how beautiful they are. They calm the wind and the sea. They seem to be pretty helpful spirits. And they certainly appear in helpful forms in a couple of Greek myths. So, for example, in the case of Theseus. So Theseus was being accused by King Minos of Crete, who didn't believe that Theseus was the son of Poseidon. And so he threw his ring in the sea, and he said, you know, if you're really the son of Poseidon, you can go in there and get it. And so Theseus just dived right on in. Pseudo-Hyginus writes, Theseus, without any invoking of his father or obligation of an oath, cast himself into the sea. And at once a great swarm of dolphins, tumbling forward over the sea, led him through gently swelling waves to the Nereids. And they give him this crown to show that he is, in fact, of a royal birth. And that crown's going to come back as well. It's from another myth. And again, there's a lot of description of how beautiful they are. So this is from a fragment of a Greek lyric about Theseus going to The same incident says, sea-swelling dolphins were swiftly carrying great Theseus to the house of his father, god of horses. There he was awestruck at the glorious daughters of blessed Nereus. From their splendid limbs shone a gleam as of fire, and round their hair were twirled gold-braided ribbons, and they were delighting in their hearts by dancing with liquid feet. And he saw his father's dear wife, august ox-eyed Amphitrite, in the lovely house. Ox-eyed is a compliment for a woman's beauty in Greek poetry. The Nereids help out the Argonauts. So in Apollonius of Rhodes' Argonautica, Thetis helps them out as they're sailing past some wandering rocks. She calls to the Nereids to help, and they say they heard her call, and when they had assembled, Thetis told them what Hera wished, and sent them speeding off. She herself, quick as the twinkle of an eye, or the sun's rays when he springs from the world's rim, sped through the water to the beach of Aia on the Tyrrhenian coast. You know, she goes and tells them what they need to do. They start, but they're not too excited. They think it's dangerous. The Nereids, swimming in from all directions, met them here, and Lady Thetis, coming up astern, laid her hand on the blade of the steering oar to guide them through the wandering rocks. While she played the steersman's part, nymph after nymph kept leaping from the sea and swimming round Argo like a school of dolphins gambling round a moving ship in sunny weather, much to the entertainment of the crew, as they see them darting up, now aft, now ahead, and now abeam. But just as they were about to strike the rocks, the sea nymphs, holding their skirts up over their white knees, began to run along on top of the reefs and breaking waves, following each other at intervals on either side of the ship. Argo, caught in the current, was tossed to right and left. Angry seas rose up all round her and crashed down on the rocks. But the Nereids, passing the ship from hand to hand and side to side, kept her scudding through the air on top of the waves. It was like that game that young girls play beside a sandy beach, when they roll their skirts up to their waists on either side and toss a ball round to one another, throwing it high in the air so that it never touches the ground. Thus, though the water swirled and seethed around them, these sea nymphi kept Argo from the rocks. The Nereids worked hard to heave Argo clear of the resounding rocks, and it took them as long a time as daylight lingers in an evening of spring. So again, helpful Nereids. There's kind of a dark side to the Nereids. Indeed, two dark sides. The dark side of the Nereids, and maybe more so, there's a dark side for the Nereids. And it's here that we begin to draw into the description of the Nereid in the Monster Manual 2. First up, let's talk about the dark side of the Nereids. And that's all to do with Andromeda. Because in ancient Greek mythology, you do not compare yourself to the gods. That is asking for trouble. Hubris is the sin of, you know, comparing yourself to the gods. It's sort of pride. Although, as has been pointed out by wiser heads than mine, hubris doesn't sort of naturally lead to your downfall. It is something that someone punishes you for. Anyway, Perseus arrives in Ethiopia, and he discovers that Queen Cassiopeia had claimed that her daughter, Andromeda, was more beautiful than the Nereids. And the Nereids had been furious about this, and Poseidon had started flooding the land, and he had sent a sea monster to attack. And finally, King Cepheus and Queen Cassiopeia agreed to sacrifice their daughter to the sea monster in exchange for an end to the attack. And then she was rescued. So the Nereids are helpful as long as you don't anger them. And you can anger them by claiming that you are more beautiful than they are. But quite a lot of the Nereid description in the Monster Manual 2 is given over to romantic relations between Nereids and humans. And this is, I mean, this is not a description of a relationship that, like, pays a lot of attention to consent, or indeed does pay attention to consent, but in the sense that it just assumes that the player characters will be willing to try and trap a woman who is not consenting to their embraces. So, you know, I mean, I would blame this on the 80s, but this is pretty close to the mythology, too. So, the Monster Manual 2 says, they are creatures from the elemental plane of water. Their name means the honeyed ones. I don't think that's right. From what I've seen, Nereus, their father, comes from a word that means wet, so it means like the watery ones. They can assume human form when they're not in the water. They're always beautiful and mostly female, young and slim, long golden hair, pale white skin, beautiful voices. Perhaps they are garbed in white and gold, but they are often devoid of raiment, wink wink. They carry around a white shawl, and if you get your hands on the shawl, it contains her soul, and she can kind of return to water if you destroy it, or if you can command her. So that's a bit like the Selkie and the seal skin. They can control water, they are shy and flighty, their antics have a playful quality, so they're not really evil. All males that look at a Nereid will find themselves incapable of causing her harm, and her actions will seem to be casual flirtations. Men have been known to sit and watch a Nereid's antics all day, and many a man has been tempted to try and take a Nereid for a wife, or merely to pursue her for her embrace. This may bring disastrous results, however, for while the kiss of a Nereid can bring sweet bliss, it may also result in a watery doom. If a Nereid is caught, she may save versus poison, and if successful, will flow away like water. Still, if a kiss is forced from a Nereid, for she is loath to give them, the player character must save versus breath weapons at -2 or drown instantly, otherwise, ecstasy is his. That is gross. It's one of those things where this game has sexual assault in it, but it's sort of aware that that's not really appropriate, and it tries to talk around it in ways that just make it sound even creepier and more gross. Mm. But the thing is that this is really a crucial part of the Nereid mythology, so I understand why it's in here. Because the most famous of the Nereids is Thetis, and apart from helping out the Argonauts, I mean, she's helping out the Argonauts because her husband, Peleus, is one of them. And the crown that was given by the Nereids to Theseus was a gift to Thetis at her wedding from Aphrodite. But that wedding is not what you'd call a dream wedding necessarily, because we are told, so Pindar writes, "And Thetis too, the sea maid, he held struggling in his strong grasp." And elsewhere, "The fate destined by Zeus, he, that is Peleus, made his own, devouring flames on the sharp claws of fearful lions and tearing teeth safely endured. His Nereid bride he won from her high seat, and saw around him enthroned the gods of sky and sea proffer their gifts, foretelling the kingdom he and his race should rule." And that thing about lions and fire and whatever seems to be that he was grappling Thetis and she was trying to get away. You know, turning into all these different shapes that a Nereid can turn into, and he had to kind of hang on. And then once he had done that, he sort of proved that he could marry her. And then all the gods come to the wedding feast. So even though this seems, you know, like the bride is not exactly giving her consent, but she's married nonetheless. And of course, the child of Peleus and Thetis is Achilles, and one of the gifts that Peleus receives at the wedding is the Pelian Ash, Achilles' famous spear. So the Nereids seem like helpful goddesses. They're, you know, minor goddesses or water spirits, and they are possibly dangerous, but definitely helpful. And they're more human scale than an ordinary god, right? So Peleus is an exceptional human being, but he's a human being, and he marries her, bringing divine blood into his family, which is why Achilles is so great. He's protected by his mother's magic. So the idea of Nereids as romantic characters, I mean, there's nothing particularly romantic about the wedding of Peleus and Thetis. My favorite version of the Trojan War story is the comic Age of Bronze by Eric Shanower, and in it, Thetis is not happy about the memories of her marriage to Peleus. There's no supernatural element in Age of Bronze, so she's a priestess of the sea god. In Hot Springs Island, Nereids are these elusive creatures. You might stumble upon one bathing in a pool or a stream. Well, bathing. They live in pools and streams or, you know, by the coast. And there's a quote about them where someone says, no, it wasn't just bubbles. I saw a woman, which is exactly that kind of, you know, sailors looking over the side of the boat and saying that they saw a mermaid sort of thing. So these seem to be your helpful or at least not unfriendly water spirits. In Hot Springs Island, because they're accompanied by hostile sea life, they can still be dangerous. And that is also a feature of the Nereid in the Monster Manual 2, that they're usually accompanied by some kind of an animal. The table includes the giant leech, which is a pretty hideous image. This idea of, you know, a beautiful water nymph and then just flopping along the sand alongside her. Little leechy, the giant leech. Just a very strange image. These little delightful things kind of emerge from the random tables in D&D sometimes. You could give me 100 tries and I would not have come up with this Nereid whose pet is a giant leech. But so they seem to combine a couple of the major themes of female water spirits in folklore, right? The supernatural bride, the helping out sailors in trouble, and the having a magic thing that if you get a hold of it, you can control them, which may go with the supernatural bride aspect, right? It may be that you can, you know, make them marry you. I mean, I don't know about you. I don't think I'm going to include making someone marry you in my D&D game. And of course, it's old D&D, so naturally, all men are enticed by the Nereid and nobody else is. So I feel like the role that you want Nereids to... So I feel like the role that you want Nereids to play in your game is the role of uncertain ally. If you want to include the romantic element of the Nereid without all the creepy forced stuff that is in the mythology and in the Monster Manual entry, I think the easiest thing to do is just set up a Little Mermaid type story, right? And that a Nereid could be interested in a relationship with a land dweller, in just the same way that a land dweller might be interested in a relationship with a Nereid. You know, they each have perspectives and abilities that the other doesn't have. They're each interesting to each other because they inhabit different worlds. And of course, both sides of the surrounding communities might not be interested in this kind of thing. So you could even have a situation where you have someone who is concealing the fact that their partner is a Nereid. And that works really well because chances are that if you've got a story that has Nereids in it, then you're in a maritime culture. So where did this sailor come back with their bride? Oh, well, you know, they were traveling the world and she's a strange lady and she keeps to herself mostly, but sometimes they say that you can hear her singing in the night. And particularly if you're in that environment like kind of Hot Springs Island, having the ability to control or summon aquatic animals can be a huge asset, even if that's the Nereid's only ability. And it's not like Greek mythology where the Nereids are bringing you the favor of the gods or can make you invulnerable. Mostly invulnerable. And I think at a smaller scale, that's what you see with the idea of the mermaid or the siren, right? That it's this very beautiful thing that is going to lure you into danger. And ultimately, I think that's intended, well, I don't know about intended to be, but I think that that can function as a metaphor for the relationship to the sea. So like in the description of the Nereids helping the Argo, they're compared to dolphins splashing along beside the boat, just happy to be doing that. They're compared to children playing and to the waves of the sea, some idea that they are waves, which is also present in Norse mythology. The daughters of Ran are maybe personifications of different types of wave. And so the sea is beautiful and the sea is enthralling, and we can certainly imagine sailors, particularly sailor adventurer characters, feeling that compulsion to return to the sea and not really being happy on land. But at the same time, you know, it's out there and it's this wonderful place full of excitement and beauty and whatever, but it's very dangerous. And so the idea that, like, oh yeah, this mermaid's gonna show you where all the, like, beautiful treasure chests are, yeah, but they're in Davy Jones's locker. It's at the bottom of the sea. Like, you want to go and listen to the beautiful singing, but you're going to get smushed by some rocks. You want to marry this lady because she's a princess or a goddess. But what that means is now you have gods for your in-laws, and that's actually very bad news for you. But it doesn't seem necessarily that Peleus was overcome with love for Thetis or even lust, but ambition? And ambition is a very relatable quality for Dungeons & Dragons characters. Of course, your players in a D&D game might not necessarily take on the role of Peleus or even Achilles in the myth. There are lots of other access points for adventurers. So for instance, Nereids in Hot Springs Island tend to show up in pairs, and that, I think, reinforces the mythological idea that they are sisters. It's a big family with 50 daughters. So you might have someone saying, you know, my sister has this magic shawl, and some dirtbag pirate has stolen it, and I need you to get it back. And if you do, I'll show you where the sunken treasure is. And you're like, cool, a shawl, how hard can it be? Until you realize that because this piece of garbage pirate has the magic shawl, he's able to make the Nereid use her water powers and command sea life for him. So you're fighting against his legion of man-eating crocogators or whatever, and you can't even do the simple thing and just kill the Nereid. I mean, simple, quote-unquote. Because, of course, the client, her sister, is going to be pretty furious if you do that. You might have the other Nereids trying to bring back the one who's gone rogue and tried to blend into human society, only to discover that the escaped Nereid is actually a pretty sympathetic character. You might have the Nereids as a distant part of a character's parentage. And, you know, as in Hot Springs Island, it seems like Nereids are like an interactable faction within the landscape, right? They have opponents, and you might enlist their help to fight those opponents, or have your help enlisted by those opponents to fight them. So one of the things that I really enjoy about the Dungeons & Dragons game that I'm currently playing is that it takes place in an animistic landscape. And what that means is that, you know, the landscape is interactable in this kind of magico-religious way. My character, who's a ranger, is sort of very superstitious about all these things. And so, you know, when they arrive somewhere new, he's like, oh, well, let's make a little offering to the gods of this place and stuff like that. And I think that that is something that you definitely get with Nereids. If you are playing a bunch of dandy pirates, as, again, a pretty common premise for a D&D game, or if you're playing a bunch of sort of sea explorers, then how you treat the sea and how you interact with it might well determine whether the Nereids like you or don't. So it might just be that the Nereids exist as a complicating factor in your sea adventure, right? You're out there fighting sahuagins and smugglers and searching for buried treasure and trying not to step on dragonfish and what have you. And if you're being a jerk about the local sea gods and, you know, not honoring them appropriately, then the Nereids are creeping up on your boat at night and unsplicing all the lines that you've spliced or stealing your grog or whatever. But if you're being cool about it, then they're being helpful. I think there's definitely room for that, that just as you might have dolphins playing in the wake of a ship, which they do, you might have nereids doing that, or mermaids, or whatever. Now, the nereids are up on the divine end of the spectrum here, by which I mean that some of the various sea people who appear in Dungeons & Dragons are merely humanoid species that live underwater. I mean, that's what the merman is, right? He's not like the Triton, being from another plane. He's just an intelligent aquatic species. And I think those people might very well have more knowledge of nereids. They might think that they'll become nereids when they die. It might be that particularly great heroes or clerics of their culture became nereids. I think there you can do the kind of Eric Schanauer thing and blend the line between a mortal and a divine being. And in a world that has aquatic, intelligent, but otherwise mundane humanoids, then it makes sense that they would have a different perspective on the role of the nereids. Ooh, I should say that the idea that nereids are accompanied by sea monsters of various kinds is consistent with kind of Greek and Roman art. So they're often depicted riding around on sea monsters, including hippocampoi, those giant seahorses from the Monster Manual. So that's pretty cool. I feel like I haven't talked as much about some of the other types of aqua people. I think it could be fun to imagine what sort of relationships nereids would have with them. So for example, we naturally assume that like mermen, they're the good guys, but like Sohuagin and Lokotha, they're bad guys. But the nereids might not see it that way. I mean, the Sohuagin are a bunch of creeps, no doubt, but they probably don't trouble the nereids any more than surface dwellers do. And what are they going to do? Set their sharks on them? I feel like the nereids are, as they're described, they're playful, and they're less concerned with the absolute morality of their actions than the novelty of them. And they seem to be motivated, insofar as we can, look at Greek mythology and say, oh, hey, consistent motivations. They seem to be motivated primarily by personal ties of affection, family, or reciprocity than any sense of right and wrong or anything like that. And again, I think that that's definitely a metaphor for the sea. So I think that that kind of gives us a hint as to what emotional aspect we want to give the nereids, because you're playing in an environment where you've got kind of, the sun sparkling on crystal blue waters, and so then you can play up the kind of natural beauty of the nereids, but then also the sea can be very dangerous, so you want to have them able to be both at the same time. Of course, that's a bit of a corny stereotype about presenting female NPCs, but I think it wouldn't take much to get away from that, the nereids are the daughters of Nereus and Doris, and they're, going to get forced to marry kings, just like daughters, am I right? Just say, well, not all nereids appear as women. And then, hey, you're off to the races. So that was a rambling account of nereids, and I think there's more to say about the role of these kinds of creatures in D&D, but hopefully that's a good start, and hopefully, Andy, you've enjoyed this discussion of nereids and what to do with them. But I look forward to hearing other people's comments in the comments section over on Patreon, or by one of the methods listed at the end of this episode. So that has been a special episode of Monster Man. Thank you very much to Andy for requesting it. I had a lot of fun researching it and talking about it. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back in just a day or two with our continuing look at the Monster Manual 2, and we've got some fun ones for you in that episode. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.